While the geopolitical situation has become more volatile in recent years, we now see wars being actively fought in Eastern Europe and now in the Middle East, with a variety of hotspots that could erupt as well. Because of this, an increasing number of people are moving to geopolitically friendly areas. New Zealand has been a major destination for the past 10 to 20 years, but there's another place that we're going to discuss today that our next guest thinks needs to be at the top of everyone's list. Joining us is Christian Takushi. He's a geopolitical strategist located in Switzerland, and you can follow all of his research at geopoliticalresearch.com. So, Christian, I know that you've been compiling a list for a very long time, and you have a series of metrics that you use looking at various places around the world that are geopolitically friendly. But there's one country that has increasingly, as you were telling me before we started today, increasingly been bumped up to the top. So let's let the cat out of the bag. Tell us a little bit more about Uruguay.
Thank you for this opportunity to share about our research. But before I address your question, let us, for the record, make this clear. From a global geopolitical and macroeconomic perspective, there is no such a thing as a safe country or a totally safe country where you go there, you're going to be fine, totally perfectly safe. Not in the future, not in the next 7 or 10 years, I think. So I think the world is going into a very difficult patch. Could be similar to what happened at the end of the 1930s when World War broke out, but it may not have to repeat in that way again. It's going to be very complicated, complex. And as I have said to you on prior interviews here, we are expecting at least, at the very, very minimum, 3 to 4 major large-scale wars in the Northern Hemisphere in the coming years. We've been predicting this since 2015. Of course, some things can accelerate, be postponed, but we're talking about 3 to 4 major wars. One of them will be very, very, very likely nuclear, and a second one has a very high chance of being also nuclear, 40, 50, 60%, depends on when we measure that. It's being oscillated, but it is possibly also nuclear. Nuclear contamination is going to be a major issue across the Northern Hemisphere, not to talk about the erosion of political stability, civic stability, political, economic, financial stability. I foresee at least one major exodus from the Northern Hemisphere. So I have been recommending for more than a decade now for people to try to look for safe places in the Southern Hemisphere. And again, there is not such a thing as a perfect place. And that which for a Caucasian family might be fine, it might not be perfect for a Muslim or Hindu family, right? So, yes, it is with this caveat that I would like to answer your question. Currently, I mean, I started this list quite a number of years ago. When I first started this, I mean, Uruguay was not in the top 10, but it has been climbing, especially since the year 2014. 2016 especially was clearly on the top 10. And in the year 2019, it moved to place number 2. And last year, Uruguay moved to place number 1 on our ranking for geopolitical safety. So we have a country ranking for geopolitical safety. And I also have to say clearly, this is not a global peace index, okay? The global peace index is something different. They look at everything, how you feel, how safe you are if you go jogging, what are the chances that your wallet may be stolen if you go to the museum or the city center. No, this is about geopolitical safety. And to put it in one word, if you need that, is like, how likely is it that your country is going to be exposed to a major armed conflict or a major war or a World War III? How likely it is that your location is going to be exposed to or near or part of the fallout of a World War III? To put it in one word, it's not the only type of geopolitical risk, but geopolitical safety of countries is pretty closely related to, major warfare between nations. Okay, so we're talking about that, and it is in that context that Uruguay has been rising, and it's now for almost 2 years now on the number one spot. And it's a country with its own issues. Like every country, it has its problems. And we can talk about that if you want, issues that I find are negative in Uruguay. But here it is a country that in the past world wars managed very carefully to stay neutral. It has a long experience in dodging bullets. It's a buffer state, just like Switzerland was a buffer state between the barbaric hordes of the North, Germanic hordes, and the Roman Empire. The Swiss learned to be a buffer state, right? They are now also surrounded by big nations. Uruguay also had to learn to be a buffer, small buffer state between giants, between Brazil and Argentina, right? So they had to fight wars. They had to learn to be neutral and to stay neutral, like the Swiss. So there is some similarities between Switzerland and Uruguay. Uruguay, of course, a little bit different. It has this as a deep port to the on the Atlantic. People that follow geopolitical military developments know that the famous Graf Spee ship of the Germans was destroyed there off the port of Montevideo. Yeah, it was a neutral state. And during World War II, the United States had an important presence there. But as being in neutral, you had different countries being kind of active there, right, for information or intelligence. So the country is, I would say, also one of the most expensive countries to live in Latin America, surely in South America. Chile is probably to some extent a more advanced country economically than Uruguay, but Uruguay is definitely, I would say, the most stable, advanced economy in Latin America, more stable even in Chile. Chile used to be quite, you know, centric and very advanced economically, but Chile has taken a massive turn for the left. You know, I mean, you could even say hard left. Uruguay has been liberal governments, liberal hands for quite a number of years, and recently it elected a conservative president. The interesting thing about Uruguay is that it's very different from other Latin American nations. It has a very high percentage of European immigrants there. So depends on the statistics you look at. I would say almost 90% of the people in Uruguay have a European ascent or European, you know, ancestor that has come, or, you know, they have a European connection. They come maybe from Italy, France, or Spain, or more recently from Canada, the United States, Germany, Switzerland, Belgium, or Great Britain. So most of the population is European, and smaller part of the population is Indian or, you know, indigenous or a mix. They also have recent waves of immigration. But as a whole, it's one country that stands out in Latin America because they don't have this massive social divide between immigrants from Europe and indigenous population, right? Which is what I would say characterizes most Latin American nations. You have most countries in Latin America, say Bolivia, Peru, Ecuador, 40, 50, 60% of the population being indigenous and 40, 50% being immigrants from Europe. And you see the tensions in society, right? Chile, for that matter, something similar too, with a large population that is local, really, really local, indigenous. So I think Uruguay is enjoying more stability than the rest of Latin America because it has a pretty cohesive population. We also have to add the fact that Uruguay has very close connections with the United States, as historically a good connection to Great Britain. British and Irish helped build the country, you could say. But they also have China as a major trading partner, right? So the country is doing what I think many new and rising emerging markets are doing, which is being multi-aligned. Uruguay is multi-aligned, has excellent relations to the big nations in Asia, close relations to Europe, of course. Most of the immigrants are from there, but also very close relation with Washington, right? So already back in World War II, the U.S. was, I would say, had a very nice presence there for intelligence gathering. So here is a country that has learned to to play with the big boys, you could say, without getting them angry about it, right? Staying geopolitically neutral. And one thing that we appreciate about Uruguay is they don't go around saying, hey, look at us, we are a neutral country, right? Because there are neutral countries that like to stress that we are a neutral country. Here's a country that doesn't do so much of that. They de facto behave in a neutral way, de facto. They don't talk a lot about that. They do it. And I think they're doing even a better job than Austria or Switzerland are doing lately. You know, Austria and Switzerland, I'm Swiss, we are in Switzerland here. We talk a lot about how neutral we are. We talk about in every sentence, every week, we're talking about how neutral we are. But fact is, we're not that neutral. We're not as neutral as we want to be. And here is a country that is not talking much about its neutrality, but is really doing it. And this is something I want to stress. And people that do their homework, they figure it out. So the other thing is the country's far away from what I would call the hotspots of the next wars. The next big wars are going to be most of them, all of them, in the Northern Hemisphere. There will be conflict in the South, but not to the level that we see in the Northern Hemisphere. You know, Northern Hemisphere, just to mention a few hotspots, you know, the Caucasus, you know, Eastern Europe, you have to mention Turkey, the EU, the situation, Iran, Israel, the Sunni Shia conflict, and all the Arab nations versus Israel. Then you have the situation in the Sahel, in Northern Africa. Then you can go to Asia, right? You have already conflicts that are simmering between Pakistan and India, between India and China, Taiwan and China. But it's not all. I mean, I could go on and on and on. There are some conflicts, some tensions in the Southern Hemisphere. But when you look at, for instance, South America, they have had a few conflicts, a few small wars, but they have learned to deal with that. They have learned to deal with that. Peru and Ecuador is the exception. They went to war a few times, but they also learned that after the third time. It says we need to solve this, and they did. You know, we don't have that many wars in Latin America. We have political drama, which is, I think, something that Latin Americans like to do. But these wars is something that we find, these repeated recurring wars is something that we find in a terrifying amount in Europe, but also in the rest of the Northern Hemisphere. So there is a certain art, I would say, in keeping your distance to it. But, you know, allow me to refer to your founding fathers in the United States. Your founding fathers warned the young United States of America, you know, to stay away from the wars in Europe, for your own safety, for the own sake of this new republic, stay away from the wars in Europe. And unfortunately, the United States has not heeded that.
So, you know, as you started off telling us, you believe that we could be moving into another difficult period comparable to what we saw in the 1930s. Of course, there are growing fears about another world war. You know, whether or not that's something that we'll see materialize or not, it's still, you know, up in the air. But like you said, you have been expecting that this period of time that we're now in, that we would see at least 3 to 4 large-scale wars in the Northern Hemisphere. One or two of these could be nuclear in nature. And so because of that, the Southern Hemisphere is more attractive, just geopolitically speaking. And Uruguay, of course, is one of those nations. And it's interesting because we just spoke with Mark Faber, and I didn't plan this at all, but he was basically saying the same thing that you are, that Latin America in particular looks much more attractive. Certain countries, he did not label specifically Uruguay, but he did say that there are certain areas in Latin America that he likes for this reason as well, given the difficulties that we see geopolitically. And, you know, when it comes to Uruguay, of course, this is the country that's ranked at the very top of your list currently. You know, I want to read some interesting things here. This is actually from International Living. So we've had them on our show a number of times as well to talk about retiring abroad or, you know, various areas that people are looking or moving to. And they do a wide assessment of various countries. But they say here that Uruguay is also among the top countries in the region when it comes to infrastructure. It has the best overall road system, the most reliable electrical grid, and one of the fastest overall internet speeds in Latin America. You'll also find quality medical care, safe drinking water, and good public transportation, and they go on and on for a number of things that make Uruguay a very popular spot and destination. Of course, there are, like you said, pros and cons to any country. But so far, it sounds like you would say that Uruguay is not really at the top on a number of other lists that you would look at, whether it's the, I think you called it the Global Peace Index or others. But, you know, according to your research, it really should be.
But the reason is the following. Unfortunately, most consultancy firms and banks and asset managers, financial services companies and law firms, they have to cater to what the clients want. And, you know, I've been a Swiss banker for many years. I tell you, finally, you do what the client wants, right? And clients may want safety, but because a war is not something you can really quantify, safety is something relative. Finally, there is one thing that they can count to the penny, and that is the amount of taxes they can save. So finally, clients may come and say, of course, I want to be safe. I want my family to be safe. But finally, what they end up doing is optimizing their whole family strategy or business strategy on reducing tax invoices, reducing the tax payments. So most of these financial services companies end up recommending their clients to go to places like Dubai. Why? Because they can save taxes there or pay practically no taxes. And Dubai is also fantastic because the wives of these clients can go shopping almost restlessly. They can go from the Gucci shop to the Burberry shop, you know, so there is an endless list of places where they can. So you have their tax avoidance or pay no taxes or pay practically no taxes, and also the glamour, right? You need both. And Uruguay doesn't offer that, I think. There are quite a lot of people that have gone to Uruguay. Would be disappointed because there is not glamour there, or not enough glamour, unless you spend the summer in Punta del Este. That is glamorous. That's great. But for the rest of the year, it's not. So the other thing is Uruguay has a very good taxation system, is territorial taxation, which I believe is the fairest type of taxation. The fairest type of taxation or system, tax-wise, I believe is territorial taxation. Uruguay says what you earn, what you have in other countries is none of our business. You didn't earn it with us, so why should we want to know about that, right? So it's your business. You declare what you earn, what you have here. So this territorial taxation is, I think, good enough for many people, but there are people that want more. There are people that want a proper tax haven, right? So I think I'm just telling you two main reasons why Uruguay is not the favorite of the financial industry yet. And I want to add, financial industry, I don't think the financial industry really understands geopolitics, even after the war of Ukraine, even after COVID and this war, Hamas, Israel. I don't think the financial industry as a whole understands the geopolitical threats that we're facing. Otherwise, they wouldn't be sending their clients to Dubai, Switzerland, Panama, Costa Rica, et cetera, et cetera. It's important also to add that it's not about going and finding the good properties of countries. It's most of the work and the modeling goes into identifying all the negatives of a country and then looking for the interconnections between them in the different scenarios. And then you also have to run Monte Carlo simulations of the different ways a scenario can change or shift, right? So it's a dynamic process. And it's not that you go and like Uruguay. For instance, Uruguay has now been climbing up our ranks, became number one last year. And only after that, I visited that, right? So I didn't recommend Uruguay because of lifestyle or nice beaches or anything like that. I chose it only because of macroeconomic stability and geopolitical stability. And one goes hand in hand with the other, right? So that's actually very important to see. You have to see all the negatives of a country and how those negatives or positive factors will change and evolve as the environment changes. That is what we do. When I mention geopolitical safety, it is, of course, for this year, but it's always looking ahead 5 years in the future. You know, I mean, I do try to look at 10 years out, and it's very difficult. but 5 years is something that we can model. And so it is actually currently Uruguay's the safest country in the world, geopolitically speaking, with an outlook of 5 years. That is the current situation.
You know, Christian, as you've been talking about Uruguay and many other places that are considered geopolitically safe, economically safe, places to even retire, one thing that's come up, or one country, I should say, that's come up time and time and again with even my own friends and relatives is Portugal. It seems like it's been at the top of many people's lists. Of course, International Living putting it as their number one for places to retire. What would you say about Portugal?
To start with, Portugal is a fantastic place. I deem Portugal probably one of the friendliest countries in Europe, at least the ones that I visited. I think Portugal and England, to me, top the list of the friendliest people I've come across with within Europe. Switzerland is not that, I can say that, but you know, we have other strengths. But Portugal is an amazing country, and Spain would come very close to Portugal. And it's a very good question you're asking, Chris. I mean, a lot of people that come to my seminars and conferences, even those that subscribe to my newsletter, are looking for a safe place for their families. They are, I would say, independent. They can move around. They would like a better place for their families, a safer place. They're worried about what's going on in the world. But there is another group of people that also attend my seminars and read my newsletters. They are people that are in their 50s and they're looking for a place to retire. And many of them ask me this question, but Mr. Takushi, why don't you recommend Portugal and Spain? Why don't you do it? And I say to them, actually, I love Portugal. I love Spain. These are among the most favorite, my favorite destinations in Europe. I like them. And these two countries have done a lot. But you have to know one thing. And I mean, there's so much going for Portugal, but it's not the most geopolitically safe country in the world. It's great to retire in, but Portugal and Spain, you could say, are part of the European Union. The European Union in itself is already de facto bankrupt, okay? Portugal and Spain have been able to build up the infrastructure thanks to massive, massive money that has been given to them by the EU, Germany, okay? Germany has been able to, and in the past, Britain too, the UK have been able to give them a huge amount of money. And the UK is no longer part of the EU. Germany is impoverishing fast. I don't know about impoverishing, but it's getting into big trouble. Germany is not going to be able to pay the huge transfers that it was paying in the past. So you have a little problem here, right? You go to Portugal, you think it's fantastic. There's a lot of the beautiful things you see in Portugal have been built with EU money. And that might not be flowing in the future as it has in the past. We have now this huge war in Ukraine. The country will have to be rebuilt at one point. Germany, France are in trouble, especially Germany. The money's not going to flow like in the past. And there is this other thing too, right? Portugal is making a huge effort to attract people. So it's working. It's working. But if something happens and the money stops flowing, people stop coming, it will have an impact on the economy. You know, Spain, similar, but it has been less aggressive in attracting people. I would say in that sense, I prefer Spain, maybe a little bit more sustainable because their economy is not just depending on attracting a lot of people, okay? You know, you know what I mean? You can attract a lot of people, you can do it for a few years, but you cannot do it for forever. At one point, your real estate becomes completely unaffordable for your citizens, right? Or Portugal has already hit that. Spain has not hit that yet because Spain is not that desperately trying to attract foreigners. But these countries, Spain and Portugal, are part of the EU. The EU is running into massive economic trouble in the future. The money is not going to flow like it did in the past. Then they are part of, you could say, NATO. They are, whether they like it or not, de facto, they're part of NATO. NATO is at war, I would say, de facto or technically at war with Russia now. via Ukraine, and it may be soon with China and other countries. We don't know. Okay, maybe soon with Iran. North Korea will be next. Russia will be. Sorry, it's complicated for a NATO member. And finally, last but not least, the two countries are very close to the Middle East. Okay, in terms of wind direction, something happens in the Middle East, a nuclear explosions, nuclear war in the Middle East. The air will move across the Mediterranean quickly. Well, Spain and Portugal are part of the Northern Hemisphere. They are not in the South. Still remaining wonderful places, though. I would not, someone has chosen Portugal or Spain, I would not tell them to leave it. I mean, they're wonderful places. The only thing you may want to consider is maybe a second base in the Southern Hemisphere. That's what I would recommend to anybody living in the Northern Hemisphere.
You know, it's interesting living in San Diego as I do. I'm sure you've seen the figures, but there's been just a massive number of people that have been leaving California for other states, of course, like Texas and Florida, two main destinations. My parents, moved out of California. They moved to Arizona, which made perfect sense for them just from a cost of living basis. It's much, much cheaper to live there. San Diego now being the most expensive place to live in the US. But, a lot of these people that are moving out of California, some of them are willing to make the jump out of the United States as a whole to some of these areas that we discussed already. The interesting thing about San Diego, and this is something I think was pretty clear. I saw the handwriting on the wall just from a lot of people that I speak with from San Francisco and LA. There's a lot of people that they didn't want to leave California, but they no longer wanted to live in a major city, especially when it comes to raising a kid. And they wanted to get out of San Francisco. They wanted to get out of LA. But if they didn't want to move out of California, well, they moved down to San Diego instead. And if they're still getting paid the same amount that they did, but they're able to work remotely out of San Diego, then it was kind of a no-brainer for them because this is considered like the vacation spot in many cases for people that live a little further up north in the state. So I think that was a huge part of why we've seen San Diego prices jump up, property prices have jumped up, and it now becoming more expensive than even New York and LA, which is amazing.
Yeah, San Diego would be my favorite town if I would move to the US. It's important not to consider this country, leave your home country and go to Uruguay, or leave your home country and go to Portugal. Maybe we should also talk about just it's healthy to stay where you are, but to build over time, gradually, a second base elsewhere, where you take advantage of both places, your home country and your second base. And maybe you will just visit there from time to time. You have the residence permit. You can go if something happens. But you can also just go there when you retire. You know what I mean? Or for your children. It's fantastic, isn't it? So this doesn't have to be a scary, stressful thing. This should be not either or. I think it becomes either or when people procrastinate and in a hurry, an urgency, they have to do something. But actually, I've been talking for years about this because I believe this could be just a lifestyle thing, then it enriches your life. You know what I mean? Instead of just looking at the sun, instead of just maximizing lifestyle, glamorous shopping and the sun or fiscal, saving money, you choose a place that is also geopolitically safe and you build bit by bit a second base there. Maybe you just go there, visit, maybe you apply for residency, you have a little apartment there, a small studio, you visit the place, you get to know the place, and over time you build more into it, you invest more into it. And finally you have a second base, So, and if something happens in the world, you can go there. And it's not a shock, it's not an either or. And you never really, really turn your back on your country because the second base will help you endure a certain period of time, difficulties or duress in your home country. But once that crisis is over, and one day this crisis will be over, World War I ended one day and World War II did also end, So you will go back to your home country and you can rebuild, you can buy businesses, you can do something. We're living in a time when it's good to stay alert, informed, prepare contingency plans, and implement your contingency plans, but always praying to God that you will not have to deploy them, It's like you prepare, but you hope that you don't have to deploy them. And actually, in that sense, your second base becomes just a nice place you visit, you know, in the summer or the winter, you know what I mean? And also a place you may want to retire, right? So, and it also becomes probably a good investment too. I think so, you know? And by the way, talking about investments, I think that when I look at how overpriced property has become in places like Portugal, real estate property is not overpriced in Uruguay, reflecting the fact that it's not being discovered yet.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So Christian, we talked a lot about Uruguay today. Any other places in the world that we didn't mention that you see as particularly geopolitically or economically safe currently?
Yeah. I mean, even in South America, there are other countries that pop up. Also, they're interesting, maybe not as much as Uruguay, but they are also climbing up the ladder. One of them is Paraguay. Another one is Peru, a little bit further down. But in Africa, we are closely following Botswana and Ghana. They are not at the level of Mauritius yet, but they are climbing up the ladder. In Asia, we have places like, we used to have Malaysia quite high up. Now it's coming down, but Indonesia is rising, and specifically Bali, you know. New Zealand remains quite high on our list. Currently number two. I think next year it might be number three.
Okay. Christian, I want to thank you for coming on to our show and discussing, of course, Uruguay, but also these other countries and just the importance of thinking about diversifying your residency, your places of residence into areas that could be more geopolitically or economically safe in the years ahead if things continue to deteriorate as we expect. But again, like you said, you know, you want to hope for the best, prepare for the worst. And these are some good countries to keep in mind for further research. Of course, you offer a large amount of research at your website. So as we close, would you mind telling our listeners the best way to access some of what you produce?
Excerpts of our research that contain all sensitive information are posted on our website, geopoliticalresearch.com. But for people that want to receive our full geopolitical reports, they can subscribe to it on our website.
Well, again, we've been speaking with Christian Takushi. He's a Swiss-based geopolitical economist and researcher. Geopoliticalresearch.com is the website. And Christian, as always, it's a pleasure to speak with you on our show. We definitely look forward to speak with you in the future about the developments underway, and we'll have to see how things progress in alignment with your outlook that you've been giving on your website.
Thanks for having me.
If you have any questions or feedback on what we discussed today, or if you'd like to get in touch with us at Financial Sense Wealth Management, feel free to check out our new website, financialsensewealth.com, or you can give us a call at 888-486-3939. For FS Insider, I'm Chris Sheridan. Thanks for listening.
Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.